kneecap always works for me.
Is that with an aluminum bat or what?
Yeah. Just whatever, you know, just a quick little inside kick to the knee and you're out of there.
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
Happy Monday morning, everyone, and it's time for another episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. I am Dan Franks, coming on shortly, my partner in crime, Joe Cassandra, and thanks to everyone who joined us last Tuesday night for the Google Hangout we did, the holiday mashup with Cynthia Sanchez and Jared Easley. It was a lot of fun, and we're glad we got to interact with so many of you guys, but it's your lucky day if you missed out, because tomorrow we're recording round two of the holiday mashup, and lucky you, it's Joe and my turn to host. So we're going to host a special edition of the Entrepreneur Showdown live on Tuesday. That's tomorrow, the 10th of December at 8 p.m. Check out holidaymashup.net for more information and learn how to join us. But if you miss it, this time next week, next Monday, we'll be releasing that holiday mashup as our podcast for next week. So you'll be able to hear it either way, and we can't wait for you to join in the fun. Today on the showdown, in round one, Joe and I are going to dive into a little Twitter talk. We haven't talked specifically about Twitter before, and Joe's picked up a new method that he's been trying to gain more followers, so we'll talk about if it's working. I think it's kind of spammy, but we'll see what you guys think of it after round one. Then in round two, we bring on Rick Calvert from the New Media Expo. Rick is the man in charge, the CEO of NMX. So we're going to talk about what it is, what NMX is, what it is about these big conferences and these big networking events, why so many people go to them, what you can get out of them. And then we're going to bring on Rick Calvert in the main event to get his take on it. We're going to ask him some hard questions, maybe how to meet that big time celebrity that we want to meet, or maybe what some networking tips are, whether it's trading business cards or anything like that, what he thinks we should do to get the most out of any big conferences such as New Media Expo. So I don't want to waste any more time. For the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, head on over to entrepreneurshowdown.com. And now let's get on with the showdown.
Round one.
In round one today, we're looking at an article by Mark Gubierti. He is a 15-year-old online entrepreneur. I know, 15, it's crazy. But he has a recent article. He writes a lot of articles, like a couple a day, actually. It's crazy. You'd think he should be in school, right? But one article that he wrote, it's called Why Following Others on Twitter is Critical Toward Success. And it was really funny, because when I read this, his first like paragraphs, when you go read it, it's kind of like what I always envisioned when I use Twitter. Like you follow just the people that you want to follow, and then everyone else in the world will want to follow you. And so you'll have like, you see those people with like 10 followers. I think like someone like Kanye West, he has one follower, and or he follows one person.
And does he follow Kim Kardashian?
I think so.
It better be if he wants to be happy.
Yeah,
at
exactly.
Home.
He follows just her, and then he's got like millions of followers, and that's what everyone always envisions on Twitter, because I guess it's like a vanity thing. But he talks about here how the reason that doesn't work is first because people aren't going to find you that way, and it takes a long time for people to trickle in, because this is what I've been doing, is just letting organic follows come in, and it goes really, really slow, especially when you're just starting out. But he realized that if you just go and find relevant people that are in the same niche as you, if you just start following a bunch of people, a lot of people are going to follow you back, and your count's going to go up, and also your exposure is going to go up.
Yeah, and I hate this idea of what Twitter has become, and that sounds like an old curmudgeon thing to say, but it really has become just a place to try to build up this social credibility, or whatever you want to call it, without actually utilizing the tool for what it's for. So, and I don't want to criticize
the kid.
Well,
what's it for? You got to define that.
Sure. To me, what's it for is to follow the people that you want to follow, see their updates, and kind of follow along with whatever it is they're talking about, promoting, linking to, producing, whatever it is. So that initial use for it, like you mentioned, you follow the people that you care about, and then hope that you know, people follow you if they care about it. And I guess if you're doing things right, more people care about what you're saying than you care about what they're saying, I would think. And that's why someone like Kanye West, or which I'm sure he's not doing his own tweeting, but take someone like Chad Johnson, the football player, or something like that. He's notorious for being super active on Twitter. And he has a lot more followers than people he's following, because there's more interested in people hearing what he has to say than people that he's interested in following. So I think that's the general idea of what Twitter should be in my eyes. But now it's just full of people trying to learn how to game the system. So this kid, and I'm not trying to pick on him or anything, but just this Mark, this tactic that he's using, he's got like 20,000 followers, but he's following 20,000 as well. Well, obviously he's not using Twitter to follow people he actually cares about, because a 20,000 person Twitter feed is like, you know, flooded. You can't even keep up with it. Even if you kept clicking refresh, you'd never be able to follow what everyone's doing. So sure, he has 20,000 followers, but that's probably a bunch of people doing the same thing as him. So it's just like this, big, you know, I don't want to use the term, but a bunch of people just pleasuring each other with their, thing. It's like, what's it accomplishing?
Well, it gives you credibility, because like, When we have someone big on and we say, hey, would you mind tweeting this out to your audience? If they have like 100,000, even if they are following 100,000, that's still going to get us traffic to our site than if they only had like 1,000 people, because that's not as exciting.
So you're saying it's a numbers game. The more people you accumulate in this following list, even if most of them aren't paying attention, if a few of them click your link, then it's...
But it also gives you a little bit of leverage, so... Say we want to start going on people's shows to promote ourselves. If we have, like right now, we have just a couple hundred followers, just because we've been trying to grow organically, it's not going to be as appealing to them to be like, oh, okay, come on my show, especially if it's an up-and-coming show, or actually if it's a huge show, it's not going to give them any benefit, because they know... out of those couple hundred people, maybe one person will click to listen to the interview. But if we grow a following, even if we follow 100,000 people, but 100,000 people are following us, if we go to some place and say, hey, we want to just come on your show and chat or whatever, then when they see 100,000, that builds credibility. And also they're more likely to say, oh, sure, because once they tweet it out, then it may get me some benefits in the back end.
I agree that it builds credibility, and it you know, the perception is that more Twitter followers you have, the bigger reach you have, which makes you more appealing to, like you said, market yourself, to be a guest on other people's show. They want to have people on, just like we do, want to have people on that have a lot of followers. So if we do get a social share, that'll send traffic back to our website and help expose us to more people. I just think that perception isn't necessarily a reality. And like you said, we have 500 stinking followers. That's nothing. But we get a lot more downloads than a lot of podcasts that have 10,000, 20,000 followers. So I feel like it's not a good metric to use as far as social reach, but it's, like you said, it's one that people do use. So I guess I'll let you kind of flow into what some of the tactics are that he picks up and talks about, since that is what we're covering, this perception is reality in terms of needing to get social shares and social followers. I'll let you kind of pick up where we left off.
Well, his strategy is you go and find like-minded people and you follow them. And so I want to know, I've heard this strategy before, so it's not something new, but after reading this, and he has a lot of followers that he's able to talk about this, it's not some guru life coach that doesn't know anything about it. So I started just doing it like 2 days ago as of this recording, because I just wanted to test it. And so I went to one of my followers who I knew had somewhat of a like-minded audience, had a podcast, and just started going down his list. And I didn't just like everyone because some of them are, I don't know what kind. They have like cartoon images, or they're some small company or something like that. That's not what I wanted to follow. I wanted to follow actual people. So I'd read their little bio tag, which is important. So you should definitely have a good, an eye-catching bio tag, and just went down and followed. I think I followed, as of this point, I think like 150 people or so. And within 2 days, I'd gotten like, I'm trying to do the math in my head. I think I got like 70 new followers just from that. And a couple of them, they tweet you and say, hey, thanks for following. Or one guy, he said, He tweeted after I'd follow him. He said, "Hey, that's a really cool podcast idea." And he went to the show and saw like the cool images. And I guess maybe he listened to something. And that was just because I hit follow on him. He found us just because I did that. And so it may be a worthwhile strategy. And I know a lot of people that use that unfollow app, which maybe I'll use that if I get too high in it, that after, I don't know, like a week, if they don't follow you back, you just unfollow them. But before, my strategy was I just like to follow people that I wanted to actually see in my Twitter feed or whatever. But now I'm thinking that maybe I need to try this other way first. And then after a while and I build that relationship, I can go through and clean out the ones I don't want to follow anymore.
Well, good luck with that, because I don't know if people know, but I operate not only my own and you operate your own Twitter, but then I run the one for the show. And I kind of use that. I went and followed a bunch of people, got up to like 3,000 people that we were following on the show Twitter page at Showdown Podcast. And we got up to close to maybe 1,000 followers following us. And then I did exactly what you said. I went through and I was like, okay, now all these people that I just kind of spam added, we don't really want to be following them. So I went through and cleaned up the list. And I'm not going to lie, it took me quite a bit of time to erase all these spammy accounts I added. And sure enough, within about a week, maybe a week and a half, we had been unfollowed by about half of our, you know, follower list. So it's a lot of people are doing that. And so that shows you that those people that unfollowed us were, you know, either bots or they had some kind of program that all they cared about was getting their numbers up. So once their numbers went down, so I don't know. It's interesting. And I don't know if the key is to have one Twitter that you're kind of optimizing and then another one that you just kind of keep personal so that you can keep using Twitter for the purpose it's intended to be. Because I have, once I whittled it down, then all of a sudden I felt like, hey, this is the Twitter that I want. When I'm looking at my newsfeed now, everything I look at is from people that I care about. Yeah. But by the way, a lot of people erased us. So I don't know. We'll have to leave this strategy. Maybe we'll get some Twitter experts on, which we haven't had yet, to help us answer some of these questions. So yeah.
Well, I'm going to keep trying this and then we can have an update in like a couple months or something. And when I'm up at 10,000 followers and I'm following 10,000 people, we'll see what happens from there. But
yeah, and if you're listening and you have any tips for us, leave them in the show notes. We'd love to hear what you guys are doing to make it work.
Just email us, either way, whichever one you want. But thanks, Mark, for that article. I want to talk to him at some other point too, just because at his age he's doing great things. But let's get to round two and the main event.
Round two.
For round two today, we're going to be discussing conferences, and we're going to be bringing on Rick Calvert, who's the CEO, founder of New Media Expo, Blog World, whichever one you want to call it. And we're going to bring him on to discuss some, like, how do you behave at conferences? What are the benefits you can draw from them? How do you get the most value out of them? And I was kind of cheesed, and I'll just get this off my chest, because I wrote a comment in one of the articles about conferences and going to conferences, and I asked, hey, Rick, how do you get the most value out of a conference? And he wrote, hey, Joe, thanks for asking the question. I'll write a long response to your question, like, by tomorrow or something. And he never did that. So I wanted to bring him on and actually get those answers directly from his mouth. So I've never been to any of these big conferences, but I know, Dan, you've had some experience going to real estate conferences and others. What have been your experiences going to them?
Yeah, these real estate conferences are really big, and I'm not talking about the ones that you go for a free weekend and then they try to upsell you, but I'm talking about a real conference, just like New Media Expo, only, you know, for a real estate niche. And I think that it's all about what you put into it, right? So if you go there and you just go from classroom to classroom and just sit there, and even if you're taking notes and listening diligently, you're not getting the full effect, because all these conferences, they have the expo floors where you can go booth to booth and actually talk to vendors, talk to other people that you might need to work with at some point in the future, or that, you know, the resources they provide you might be able to use. But more importantly, it's the networking. And I know this is kind of beating a dead horse. Everyone says, oh, well, all these expos and events, the best thing to do is go there and get your networking on, kind of thing. But it's really true, because these are people that by default, if they're there, they're interested in something similar to you. So then that clears that hurdle right there. So you're not on the streets. You're not going to some entrepreneurship meetup where maybe these people have no interest in blogging or podcasting or anything like that. At this event, that the New Media Expo, you know for sure this person is interested in the exact same thing as you. So that breaks down those barriers and automatically gives you a gateway into networking with everybody there pretty much.
Well, that's a good tip. I guess, yeah, because most people, when you meet someone new, you're trying to find that point of shared mutual interest or whatnot, whether you've lived in the same place or you like the same team or whatever. So there you already have a point of conversation, because a lot of people who may write blogs, and we've talked about this before, may be very introverted. So maybe they get a little shy when they have to go into a room full of thousands of people. But now they have a point of contact that even if you're just sitting by someone you've never met, you can just say, hey, what do you write about? Or what is your podcast about? And you probably would get an answer out of that instead of like a weird look, like maybe you'd get somewhere else. So, yeah, we'll ask Rick about that. We'll ask, I guess like we're going to direct to a show where he talks about how he built the New Media Expo in 2006 up to now, where it's thousands upon thousands of people. But we'll also talk about maybe like how can you get a speaking gig there, because they bring on, I think, over 200, I think you once said, speakers, and they get thousands of applicants. What may be a way that you could stand out from that? And that'll be something I know we'll be interested in down the line, to try and get those speaking introductions and into that. But also, if you are doing the networking, there's certain ways that you can do it better than others. Like, you not just talking randomly to people, but is there a strategy for meeting certain people or certain meetups? Is there a strategy to all that?
Well, I think Rick can give us some insight with this, because he doesn't just run New Media Expo. He runs Social Media Summit, and he runs a couple different things. And I know he's got one at the time of recording. There's one in Dublin that he's working on, either has come just passed or is coming up very shortly. So that's a big one. So he really is an expert at putting on these conferences, and obviously is able to witness the people getting the most out of the conferences versus the people getting the least out of them. And you mentioned like how to network, but I think maybe the most important thing is how to know who to avoid networking, because there's going to be, and you laugh, but there's going to be time wasters everywhere. Anywhere you go, there's going to be fakers. And you know, you and I, we're not paying thousands of dollars to go to Las Vegas for New Media Expo to interact with people who are just the entrepreneurs. We want to interact with people that can help build us and help make us better. We don't want to go there and waste our time. So I think maybe Rick might also have some good points about how to avoid that kind of thing.
Yeah, since he's been doing it for 6+ years, he probably has some experience knowing how to avoid those people. So we're going to get right to it. Since I haven't been to a conference, I can't really add any value to this conversation. So let's get to Rick in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
For the main event today, we bring on Rick Calvert. Rick is the CEO and founder of New Media Expo, or Blog World, whichever way you want to go. Turn blogger to conference organizer. He's built it in the past half decade to one of the biggest conferences out there, especially for the online world. Rick, thanks for joining us today. And you just got married, as you just mentioned. So congratulations.
Thanks, Joe. Glad to be here.
We appreciate it. So before we dive into just talking about conferences in general, is there a certain place or podcast that you've been on that tells your backstory really well?
Oh, wow. I've told it a whole bunch of times. So I know we have our own podcast called The Podcast Report. Mm-hmm. And there's an episode that I did with Cliff Ravenscraft where we kind of talked about that. I just talked about it a little bit on another podcast. There's when you get to be as old as me, there's a whole bunch of different elements to the story, you know? So sometimes I go off in one direction and sometimes I focus on some other stuff that are part of the story, I guess.
Love it. Okay. Yeah. When we did our research on you, we listened to one of those, Cliff interview, so it's a good one. So diving into just conferences in general, since you've been doing it for the past couple years, let's just look at what is like one of the most common misconceptions people have when they go to like one of these NMX conferences. What are they thinking about it wrong in a certain way, since you've seen it from the beginning to where it is now?
Well, so I've been involved in the event industry since 1997, primarily trade shows. New Media Expo is a little bit more of a conference, but the first trade show I ever worked for was called the SEMA show. It was over 100,000 people when I worked there. And I've also done Comic-Con, which was 60,000 people when I left. It's 100,000 people now, too. New Media Expo, not that big yet. We expect 4,000 people this year. One of the things that I think for all events that people don't understand is how much stuff cost us as a show producer to put on. Like, for example, a gallon of coffee costs us about $50. To put internet at the show at New Media Expo costs us about $30,000. And that's with us kind of scrimping, right? And the internet never works right. One of the biggest complaints you get at any social media event is the internet doesn't work. That's because you're usually in some kind of quasi-government building, so they're going to be inefficient already. And then they're not prepared to deal with a whole bunch of social media people. And most – the internet is geared to download content, not to upload content. And all of our people are uploading stuff. You know, they're tweeting, they're writing blog posts. Sometimes they're live streaming. So we just crush their internet every single time. And and one of the misconceptions, I guess, that people have is who's going to be there, because we have such a wide audience at New Media Expo, where I'm sure we have people that you guys know and that you're friends with, and then people that, you know, you look up to as kind of role models. And then there'll be other people at our show that you've never heard of that you probably should. And people don't realize kind of how broad the reach is of the people who come to New Media Expo.
So how do you get people? Because you bring in the big names, so how do you get people to maybe bypass going to see like a Pat Flynn or whatnot, and go to maybe one of these lesser people? Well, quote lesser people.
Well, see, this is the thing. We don't have very few people who speak at our show who are not a big name. They're just not a big name in the world you live in, and so that's one of the. So let me ask you guys a question. Have you ever heard of Robert Scoble?
Me, no.
No.
Perfect. I love reminding Robert how many times people don't know him. So he's arguably the most famous technology blogger in the world. He's been coming to New Media Expo since the very first show. He would be one of those people you guys have never heard of, right? But he's a big deal. Or we might get somebody like Jenny the Bloggess, who's one of the biggest mom bloggers out there. You guys probably never heard of her. Or we get somebody like Chad Vader, who's got tens of millions of downloads on YouTube. They're a web TV content creator. So going to your question, how do you get somebody to go into that session when they want to go see Pat Flynn? That's a tough one. Just, I guess, understanding that. Of the 300 speakers that we have at the show, they are all the top of their game at whatever they do. Another one, Amanda Blaine, she's got over 1 million Google Plus followers. People like that you might not have heard of before you came to New Media Expo.
Hmm. Well, so something Joe mentioned in round two was that he'd never been to any kind of conference like this before. And he, I think, even posted a comment on one of the blog posts at nmxlive.com asking how to get the most out of a conference as somebody who's a complete newbie, what he needs to do to get the most out of it. And I think he's still waiting for the response. So now I get to ask for him directly to you.
Thanks, well, so one is prepare ahead of time, like do a little research, see the speakers that we've announced and see who you really want to see talk. And, we have a bio for everybody so you can see what they're about, but you might want to do a little research beyond that. Also, we're about to post a Twitter list of attendees so you can see who's attending, who you might want to connect with. So do your research ahead of time. Come with a plan. Don't have every minute of the day filled up, but definitely have a schedule to say, okay, these are definite things that I want to do. Schedule some free time where you can just kind of network with random people who are there, and bring business cards. Don't be that guy who just, hands out your business card to everybody you meet, but be prepared when somebody says, hey, how do I get a hold of you? Maybe we can do some business together later. Be prepared to do that. By all means, have fun. but don't be a drunken idiot. We have some great parties at the show. We usually have a lot of free booze, so you could be a drunken idiot. But that's kind of like our own form of evolution, right? Where we weed out the people who aren't professional and serious. You know, the people who don't show up the next morning to work are going to miss out on why you really came. I mean, it costs money to go to a show like this, right? You pay for the pass, you got to pay to travel, you got to pay for the hotel, you got to pay for your food. It's worth every cent of it, but only if you do what you need to do to get your money's worth out of it. Another thing is set goals for yourself. Why are you coming? You know, what do you want to do? Do you want to learn how to make your podcast better? You're looking to grow your audience, you're looking to monetize your content. So what are your objectives when you come to the show? And then be prepared to not get any sleep. People start at the early in the morning before the show. People work way into the night after the show with parties. And then there's private meetup groups. There's all sorts of networking dinners and stuff going on. Just be prepared to catch up on your sleep when the show's over.
Well, that's great advice. And I'm going to keep this at Joe being kind of the example person. So say Joe, you know, Joe's interviewed Pat Flynn. Joe wants to meet Pat Flynn in person. So does all the other, you know, 3,000, the other 4,000 people also want to, you know, go meet Pat Flynn in person at this event. What does Joe need to do to meet Pat Flynn, make a short connection without just completely, you know, being the guy that's hogging Pat Flynn, so to speak, or anyone else, you know, for that matter?
So a couple of things. So by the way, Pat Flynn is definitely not famous to every person at our show. Just like Robert Scoble, I'd say half of our audience has never heard of Pat Flynn. So it's only 2,000 people trying to find him.
Okay.
Right. You know what? Not everybody, despite that advice I just gave you, not everybody will follow it. So if you show up to Pat's session early, you might have a chance to catch him there. If you hang around after the session's over, I'm certain you'll at least get to say hello to him. And if you hang around the New Media Lounge, I know Pat in particular shows up there, which is just an area where there's tables and outlets and internet connectivity for everybody to use. But stalk him on Twitter. Find out where he's at. You know, if he's – I don't know if Pat uses Foursquare or not, but if he's checking in, telling you where he is, then go there. it's if you go there specifically to meet Pat or Cliff Ravenscraft or John Lee Dumas or somebody like that, it's almost guaranteed that it will happen. You'd have to be really unlucky if you were trying to not meet those people. Now, you had a really good point, though, Dan. Don't be that guy who – also monopolizes his time and keeps, you know, yapping at him when he's got 50 other people behind you waiting to talk to him. You know, be respectful of his time and everybody else's time too.
So,
by the way, the beautiful thing is once you've made that connection, right, and you found you've got something in common, there's a reason for you guys to follow up. Now you can talk with him later or afterwards.
So since you're meeting all these different people, I'm guessing you're one of those people who are a component of bringing a lot of business cards. Is that something you're a fan of?
Absolutely.
So even at like a social media thing, instead of saying, hey, I'll just follow you on Twitter, you're saying give that person a business card, especially if maybe they're getting hundreds of business cards thrown at them?
Absolutely. The technology can fail you at any given time, right? So good old analog stuff still works. Business card, carry a pen where you can write down notes for yourself when your technology fails you.
Gotcha. So since you say there's all these different ways to meet people, is there a specific ones that are the best? Do you think the private meetups with certain people are better than going to the big parties where there is the free booze?
Not necessarily. You know, all you're looking for is to get your moment in front of that person, right? And the first thing is, what's your goal? Just because you want to meet Pat and take a picture with him? That's not a very big goal. So
that's not a good goal either.
Guaranteed that will happen. Okay. But if you've got a specific question for him, or maybe you've even got a business proposition for him, or you want to ask his advice in particular, have that idea in mind. Some people, if you get really nervous, even rehearse what you're going to say right before you get up there so you don't go, oh, I love you, man. You know, I mean, because it happens.
Do they do that to you, Rick? Is that why?
Only – nobody says, I love you, man, but only
– Well, hopefully your new wife.
Only at New Media Expo do I actually have what's called the handler. It's a person that helps me get from point A to point B.
Like Lil Wayne.
Security guard.
Yeah. No, it's just a person, and I've got a secret signal that says, get me away from this person. just so I can be places on time, because mostly it's just people saying, hey, thank you for putting on the conference. I'm having a good time, something like that. Or they want to yell at me because the internet doesn't work. But typically, so at New Media Expo, yes, a lot of people are talking to me too, but on any given day, just like you guys know, you may be famous on the internet, but people at the coffee shop have never heard of you.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, you had maybe a little signal of how to, your handler can help you get away from from somebody that's getting annoying. But say for Joe and I, you know, if Joe's talking to somebody and Joe's just really, you know, this guy's a real time suck on Joe and Joe's trying to figure out any way to get away from him. What's your best advice for the most polite way to get away from this person with, you know, when Joe doesn't have a handler?
Kneecap always works for me.
Okay. Is that with an aluminum bat or what?
Yeah. Just whatever, you know, just a quick little inside kick to the knee and you're out of there. If you guys are tag teaming, right? If you guys are there together.
Hey, I'm not going to be Joe's handler. I don't know what you're talking
about.
No, but
you guys can do it for each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got
you. Or you give each other a high sign, whatever that may be, and you're getting stuck with somebody. You know, just have a little signal, and then, you know, Joe, you can go, hey, Dan, we got that appointment right now, you know?
That appointment.
But, yeah. I don't know.
Well, you go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was gonna ask about, because I know there's this area, again, I haven't been, so I don't know the exact what it's called, but like where sponsors and all these media companies are. What's your strategy if someone goes in there, what's their strategy? What should they be doing?
So yeah, we have an exhibit floor, where the sponsors have booths. You definitely should go there. Number one, because our sponsors will like it. But number two, because that's, for example, WordPress is there. Guys like Headway Themes are there. That's a place where you can go to find out tools that you need to make your content better. Raw Voice is there with their Blueberry stuff, which is, you know, blogging software for specifically for podcasters. So, again, there's a whole bunch of them where I go and I just ask them a question. I'm like, what does this do? And who's it for? Who's your customer? Livefire is another longtime sponsor of ours. You know, it's a comment system. Just to say, you know, what's different about Livefire versus Discuss or some other commenting system? Why should I use this stuff? Everything you do at the show should be geared around creating better content, building a bigger audience, monetizing your content.
What about marketing?
Well, that goes to building your audience, right? So creating, distributing, monetizing, when I shrink it down into a couple of little buckets. But you're always trying to create better content, reach more people, and then monetize that content.
Okay, I go now, Joe.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I've been unsuccessful jumping in here. Rick, I want to take a little break from getting advice from you and maybe get a little story from you. You've not only put on a lot of conferences, but surely that means you've attended a lot as well.
All over the world.
What's the best? Exactly. So what's the best presentation you've ever seen and what made it that way?
Oh, man. Okay, so one of the – I suck at picking one thing, all right? So, but I'll tell you one person that I was –
You have
so,
one wife at least.
That's good, yeah. That's right. Thank you. She'll be happy about that too. But one person that sticks out in my head is Guy Kawasaki. I saw him at Gnomedex, which is an event that Chris Perillo puts on. Have you guys ever heard of Chris Perillo?
Negative again.
Or Gnomedex. So again, one of the most famous tech bloggers in the world. Chris is a huge video blogger and podcaster, been around forever. He has a huge dedicated community, and he ran an event. He quit it a couple years ago, but called Gnomedex. Anyway, Guy Kawasaki, big famous guy in his world. He was one of the first, he was first evangelist at Apple. He's a VC. And so I saw him at Gnomedex and he gets up. I'd never seen him speak before or met him. And he gets up and he goes, okay, guys, I can talk about this thing or this thing or this thing. You know, he named off three topics. He goes, which one do you want to hear? The audience voted. He goes, okay, boom. And he went into his talk. And it was by far the best talk of the entire show. So the guy had not one, but three talks in his pocket that he had memorized step by step, and he just killed it. Another one for me was Dana White at New Media Expo last year, the president of the UFC. He was freaking awesome. He was awesome. And a guy named Bruce, I'm forgetting his last name. He's a editor of Forbes magazine. He interviewed Dana and, you know, he would ask him a question and Dana would act like he was a little mad and like he was going to beat him up. It was pretty funny. So Chad Vader, those guys are hilarious. There's a few.
So what do you think? You know, you talked to a couple different examples there. You know, Dana White had a, you know, a playful kind of joking style, whereas Guy had more of a, you know, off the cuff, but still excellent. You know, he kind of showed his versatility there. What do you think kind of that one big thing that any speaker, if they're presenting at a conference, could key in on to make their presentation memorable?
By the way, I should make the point for Guy. He had presentations for each of those talks on, you know, he had a deck for each one on his Mac ready to go. So he had three presentations, you know, ready to go at a moment's notice. But for every good speaker, there is an element of education and there's an element of entertainment. You've got to give people real actionable information where they can come away from that and say, wow, I learned something. I'm going to go use that today. And then you've also got to keep them entertained because, especially in the world we live in today, we're all ADD. You know, we're getting bombarded. You guys are probably getting bombarded with Twitter messages right now, and people are trying to Skype you and emails coming in. I mean, it's constant for all of us. And so you've got to entertain people to keep their attention so they're going to listen to what you have to say. It's good to include something personal about yourself, but definitely don't make it, you know, the story of you is your whole talk. You're there to give people education and entertain them while you do it.
What's the biggest name, or who's the biggest name that you tried to get but couldn't get?
Arianna Huffington. Since the first year, we've been chasing Arianna Huffington.
And what's her excuse?
She's got a million of them. But we're persistent, man. We're not giving up. But the very first year, my partner Dave Sinkin sent a message to Mark Cuban on Facebook and asked him to speak, and he did. And so that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Nice.
So most of the people we go after, we get.
Well, then you must be very persuasive then.
Well, we tell all of our, you know, social media friends to harass them until they say yes.
There you go. Build a little army against them. That's how.
But Arianna's immune to our charms.
So for these speakers, I guess the ones that you don't pick, but people actually submit to, how does that criteria work and how do you sift through all those?
It's hard. There's so many. We get 1,000 or more every year of people submitting. Wow. And there are a lot of really, really good ideas. So usually the hard part is you'll get, you know, 10 people submitting generally the same idea, picking which one of them is going to give the best talk, and also which one of them maybe hasn't already spoke before, because we've definitely got our friends who spoke several times that we like. So sometimes when we turn somebody down, it's just because they've spoke a couple of times already. But in a presentation, if whether it's for our event or anybody's event, it's amazing how many bad presentations you get submitted. If you can't spell right, if you can't describe your session right, if you can't tell me what people are going to learn in your session, then we just put you in the automatic no pile.
Is there a specific, do you want people when they submit, let's just say for Nubity Expo, not other ones, do you want them to be, have a very general topic, or do you want them to be very specific on the topic and it'd be very honed in?
I think for every event, we're lucky for us that it's easy to get people who are experts specifically in what we do. We, you know, there's a whole universe of passionate people when it comes to blogging, podcasting, web TV, and social media. But so I think every event wants you to talk specifically to that audience. But if you're at a bankers conference or an insurance salesman conference, or, you know, just there's so many other industries that aren't that exciting, it's really hard to get a speaker who's dynamic, can talk specifically about your topic and do that, educate and entertain. But another challenge for us is that podcasters, I think, are better because you guys talk, right? For bloggers, these are people who write and don't necessarily speak in front of people. So you might be the best writer out there, but you just can't give a presentation in person. So if somebody, if we haven't seen a video or seen somebody speak ourselves before, it's sometimes it's hard to know, okay, that guy's a great blogger, but are they going to be a great speaker?
So what's something that you struggle with every year when you're trying to organize this?
One is including all the topics we want to include. There's just so much stuff. Same thing, including as many speakers as we want. You know, there's so many great people we have to turn down every year. Those are two of the big ones.
Well, let's talk about something that's huge after you meet a bunch of people or go to any kind of networking event, especially one of this magnitude, and that's the follow-ups. You already mentioned, you know, collecting a bunch of business cards from at least people you talk to, not just, you know, picking them up off the ground if someone drops them, but people you actually made a connection with, you have their business card, maybe even you sat in on a speaker's presentation and you want to maintain a relationship with those speakers or those other people you met. What are some tips you can give to do that efficiently but effectively?
So number one, this is a statistic that's kind of held true from the beginning of time. 80% of all leads from trade shows and conferences never get followed up. 80%. So just know that if you're one of the 20% of people who do follow up, you're going to, just that one step alone will put you above 80% of the rest of the people. Secondly, when you do follow up with somebody, you shouldn't be immediately trying to sell them something unless you've already talked about them buying some particular thing from you. So being human with them, and finding out, you know, how you can work together. And definitely, I mean, we live in a social media world. It's so easy for all of us to connect with people on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, in addition to an email. I like to connect with somebody on at least one social channel and an email at the same time. So they've kind of gotten ping from me, and that makes you kind of stick out in their mind.
So what's something this year that is going to be different from last year that if people are coming from last year, they can expect, oh, this is going to be something new?
Web TV. It's the, when we started New Media Expo, it was always called Blog World and New Media Expo. And, you know, the Blog World is at the front because back in 2006, blogging is what everybody was talking about in the news and every newspaper, every magazine. It was just everywhere. So that was the term that was mainstream. Last year, podcasting blew up. It's funny because, you know, Podcast Expo was its own show in 2006, even before the first Blog World happened, but it kind of died down for a little while, and it's really kind of come into a whole new renaissance. So podcasting will be, it was 10 times bigger last year, and it'll at least be twice as big again this year. But web TV, the time has come where video on the web can compete head to head with traditional TV. And you see like Netflix with Orange is the New Black and House of Cards. There's the Lizzie something Diaries. I can't think of the name, but it's basically Pride and Prejudice told on YouTube. I mean, there are people making real episodic, awesome content on the web, specifically for the web. And that's why we're producing the Web TV Awards this year. It's going to change the game for a lot of people.
So you think Web TV, like a lot of people are saying, like 2013 is the year of the podcast. You think it's the year of Web TV?
Absolutely. So the interesting thing is it's kind of both things happen at the same time. 2013 is the year. Everybody who does marketing and social media is talking about podcasting. Okay. And that's because you've had Mike Stelzner's podcasting now, Chris Progen, who started PodCamp again a decade ago, is now podcasting again. And you've got so many other people that are, you know, really John Lee Dumas, who showed up for the first time at New Media Expo a year ago in New York and now has the number two business podcast on iTunes. Just kind of came out of nowhere. There's a lot of people who've had that success in podcasting. Web TV is at that point where it's about to explode the way podcasting is this year. Remember, the show's January of 2014. So I guess 2013 could be the year of podcasting. 2014 will be the year of Web TV. How's that? Nice.
There you go. We're going to quote you on that, and December 31st, 2014, we're going to come back to you and see if it was true.
You turn the lights on, absolutely. And one other thing I should remember, I should mention. So you think about new media is just traditional media being reinvented on the web, right? And blogging was first because the technology is the easiest. But if you look at the traditional media pyramid, it is exactly the same in new media. It's just inverse for a little while as the technology caught up. TV is at the top. Video is where the most eyeballs and the most dollars are. And that will absolutely be true in new media. Video will bring in the most money and the most eyeballs of any form of new media.
In what ways do you think?
Every single way, in digital advertising and sponsorship and using it as a lead generator to sell some other product, video will be the number one thing.
Do you think that web shows on YouTube will then start getting picked up by Netflix and they'll start streaming them?
Absolutely. It's happening now.
It is happening?
Yep. And there will be alternatives for YouTube. There are a whole bunch of people who are trying to compete with YouTube now. You will see in the near future real competitors for YouTube.
Well, Rick, we appreciate you coming on. I know you're a very busy man, especially this time of year.
So we all are in new media. Aren't you guys busy?
Well, we're not the ones organizing a conference. So.
So. We're just going to enjoy your $30,000 internet. That's all.
I hope that you guys do.
So where does most of your revenue come in? Does it just come in from the ticket sales?
It's actually for us. So different events it shakes out differently. Like our TBEX event is 80-20 sponsors to attendees. Mm-hmm. For New Media Expo, it's about 50-50 sponsors versus attendees.
So you do a bunch. You do different. I know you do other conferences. Is there anything like, I guess, like new media online stuff conferences that you're doing, like a smaller version of it anywhere?
Well, everything we do is new media related. So now we do New Media Expo and then TBEX, which is Travel Blog Exchange. It's just for travel blogging, which is a lot of fun. And then the other one we do is called Small Business Summit. That's for small businesses using new media and technology.
Love it. Well, if someone wants to now attend NMX after you've convinced them, where should they go to learn more and maybe sign up for it?
Just nmxlive.com.
Nice. And if we want to learn more about you, do you have a personal site we can go to?
I don't. I was a political blogger when I started. Mm-hmm. It was called The Real Ugly American. People, you know, it's not polite to argue about politics amongst friends and stuff. And so anyway, when I started Blog World, I shut down my political blog. So
gotcha. But we can find you on Twitter. So
yes, you can find me on Twitter, and I'll talk to anybody who cares to talk to me. And I do blog on the Blog World blog.
Yes, we've seen that. And you've built a list for NMX that you send out updates and whatnot. What is the purpose of that? Is just to keep updates, or do you try and is there any other strategy behind that?
Between our email?
Yes.
Yeah, it's to update people on what's going on with the event. And obviously the product we sell is the event, the experience of the event. So we're trying to update people about speakers, about deadlines, also content that we have on our site, and content on our speaker sites that might be helpful to them.
Got it. Well, we appreciate you coming on, Rick. Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan, Joe, for having me.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.